But really, a much more important matter, we have a chance to speak to Claude Lacaille, who is, I believe, on the line. Are you there, sir?
Yes.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us. You're the author of The Rebel Priest, and you're going to be in Toronto in a few days, on Friday.
On Friday, yes.
On the 20th of November. And I know that a local writer, author of two really important books, many people in Toronto read Ted Schmidt, and he has a great website. He's going to be the moderator of your meeting.
Yes.
We had him on this show talking. He was very excited about your book because you have called to everyone's attention the role of members of the church, a priest such as yourself,
yes,
who decided and made a big decision to be closer to the people, particularly in countries where there's terrible poverty and oppression, and to not desert them in their time of spiritual need, but also political need. Could you, how did you come to that position and become the, someone who has lived and worked as you have?
Well, you know, I was a kid when I decided to be a priest. We were living in Quebec in the years 50, in the 50s, and this was the priest-ridden province. So there was a lot of religious environment, you know. And I wanted to be a missionary. And I read the gospel at that time, and I discovered Jesus with all the poor, the sick, lepers, and prostitutes, and so on. And this fascinated me. At that time, I was 15 years old. And
those are big subjects for a 15-year-old.
Yes. And so when I went to the clergy, I found a clergy that was preoccupied of liturgy, of ceremonies and things like that, but they never spoke to me about the poor of the world and the what Jesus used to do. So I was kind of rebel with all that teaching. When I went out of the seminary as a priest, I was 23 years old. I went to it's a long story, but I arrived to Port-au-Prince in Haiti, almost at random. I was on a trip, and my superior asked me to stay there, and I was with a priest in the shanty town of Port-au-Prince. It was a very big shock for me, because I never could imagine such a misery and such human conditions, inhuman conditions, I would say. Mm-hmm. And this shock was my baptism of fire, I would say, mm-hmm, because until that moment, I decided that I will consecrate my life to the poor, to justice, to social justice. But at that time, I could not understand what was going on, because I had no analysis of the society. I didn't know why there was a dictator called Duvalier, Papa Doc, and he was a madman. He was a very bad man. But I had no analysis why this occurs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you don't understand, you feel impotent. You feel you have no power to do something.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing today with these events in Paris, you know. People who don't understand what is going on in the world, the most of the people, they feel impotent and they feel sad and they think that this is the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But so I try to analyze, to understand what was going on in Latin America. And
mm-hmm,
this was a very important period for Latin America because, you know, it was a time where the United States was favoring the dictatorships everywhere to change the economy and so on. And so little by little, I became conscious of what was going on, and I committed myself more and more with the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you really walked into a situation which is certainly Canadians remember that of Chile.
Yes,
of
course.
And my memory of your book is you had not only did you have the issue of the suffering of the people and the type of government that they were facing, but you also have an issue within the church because you were being encouraged. You must have been almost schizophrenic, because sometimes they seem to be encouraging you in your work, but other times they would say, no.
Yes. Well, you know, when in Chile and during the dictatorship of Pinochet, you know, military dictatorship, we were all living, the Canadian priests, there were 12 Quebecers there, and we all lived two by two in different shanty towns, working barrios, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were living among the people, and there was a lot of oppression, torture, arrests, and so on. So we decided to accompany people. And our cardinal at that time was, he was a lawyer, as the chief of the Catholic Church, was had a formation as a lawyer. So he decided to go on the defense of human rights.
Uh-huh.
And so he told us, you know, people have the right to organize themselves, to have their unions, to have their organizations, and the dictatorship doesn't want, so we have to protect the people and give them a kind of umbrella so mm-hmm. that they can reorganize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were encouraged, and this was the line of Council Vatican, the Second Council of the Vatican, that wanted us to be in touch with the problems of the people, and especially the poor. And mm-hmm. so we were encouraged by him, and it was a very nice time. It was a challenge, because we were always on the borderline, you know, acting illegally many uh-huh. times, because there was the Constitution was not... There was no freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when John Paul II arrived, he was told by Reagan that liberation theology was infiltration of Marxism and of communism in the church.
Uh-huh.
And he believed that, so he persecuted us. And this was a big, big challenge at that time.
By the way, did you find yourself, I mean, you raised the point that you said that and it was very vivid in the book, that you taught people what the messages were in the Bible, and you said that they could learn, and that many of them did, to
yes.
See in the Bible many stories and many moments which shed light on their struggles, and
yes.
also justified them as Christians.
Of course.
Could you talk about that a little bit? Because that was...
Yes, because, you know, we're used to read the Bible in a fundamental way, you know, taking this by the book, by the letter, and if those stories were to be taken literally. But the people who are poor and oppressed, when they read the Bible, they recognize themselves and what those people of the Bible lived, because those people in other centuries were oppressed too. And this book has been written for oppressed people to stand up and maintain their hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so people used to read the Bible and say, oh, that's very easy. For instance, we have a text in the Gospel that says Jesus multiplied the loaves, you know, of bread to give to the people.
Mm-hmm.
But our people said, no, there's no multiplication. This is sharing.
Huh? Yes.
And so he taught us to share. And when we are in poverty, we have to share, because there's no way other way to survive but sharing.
Yeah.
So people would be inspired by those old histories, but for what they were living in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were in an interesting situation in that I remember that some came to kind of like be police in a sense. They were watching you, and they said, well, you know, you better stick to Christianity,
because
we're watching.
Yes, yes. Just talk the right things of the gospel, they said.
Yeah, and so you did.
I did.
And they were surprised.
Yes, they were surprised.
They,
you know?
they started to suspect maybe Jesus is some sort of a Marxist or something.
Yes, we had a march with the Mary, you know, the mother of Jesus, that in the Catholic faith is a very important figure. Mm-hmm. And we had a a kind of procession, and it was all people who have been persecuted, you know, and women. And so it was written, the Song of Mary says that he threw the potent ones out of their thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And so the military that saw it, they said, oh, he called on the on his phone and said to his boss, you know, those are politics, because they say that God is throwing the powerful people out of their thrones. I said, no, this is the faith of Mary. God is on the side of the weak. And he said that's politics. Of course it's politics.
Yeah, he has a point.
Yes.
Well, another rather, I thought, fortuitous development was that you, of course, were treated with suspicion also by people on the left.
Of course.
Revolutionaries, people struggling against these dictatorships, and they were worried about you. But that turned into kind of a productive kind of debate or struggle, because you seemed to challenge them to, let's say, which one of us is going to be most loyal to the poor, right?
Yes, that's it. You know, no, we had a very good relationship with the left. But of course, they used to use us and not believe that we will be revolutionary until the end. I said, we want a new society. We want a society where the poor have their place, a society where there is no poor mm-hmm. at all. We want justice and equality. We have many things in common. So don't try to use us just as infiltrating us and trying to use the church on your behalf. We are able to go to the end of our compromise, and we are ready. Many Christians of all faith, of all confessions, you know, have mm-hmm. given their life during those years in Latin America, in Guatemala, in Salvador, in Nicaragua, mm-hmm. and in Chile, Argentina. Many, not only priests or bishops, but mostly peasants and mm-hmm. ordinary people who were believers and. In the name of their faith, they fought for liberty, and they fought for justice, and they were inspired by their faith, and they are martyrs of the Latin American Church. Mm-hmm. And so those people have been very faithful to the poor, you know.
Yeah, your story off. I keep thinking of the writer Graham Greene. You sound like a Graham Greene character. That
I love Graham Greene. Wrote a novel about Duvalier, and I read it when I was there.
Yeah.
It was a very good author.
He would have been delighted with your book, Rebel Priest. I'm really I can guarantee,
yes.
Because you were fulfilling something that he was continually looking for, in my opinion, in his writing.
Yes.
This is Claude Lacaille, and the book is Rebel Priest, and Claude Lacaille will be speaking at Betsatoon on Friday the 20th at 7 p.m., and Ted Schmidt is going to be there and moderating and has some things to say. And I have to ask you this. You really risked your life. You took a physical beating and a spiritual one, too, because your church certainly the leadership began to treat you like somebody to be hunted down. I don't want to know if I should use the word burnout, but you certainly had to withdraw
yes.
for a time to recover.
It was, yes. Yes. Well, you know, I don't want to show as a martyr or as a hero.
Were tired.
Yeah, I was tired because we had been fighting 11 years against repression and going to visit the people in the jail and so on, and that it was a lot of work. So I got exhausted and I had to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have been given a vocation as priests that we had to save the world. This is a very heavy load, you know, for just one man. And so my doctor there, he told me, you're very tired, and you have to learn to do only what you can do. You're just a man. You're not able to save the world alone.
Yes.
So keep quiet and try to rest and change your mind. Don't try to save the world by yourself. This is a task that we have to do all together.
Yeah.
And it's a long time fight.
Yeah.
So,
wasn't it St. Francis who said that he, when he was fading, he asked forgiveness of his body, which he called the poor donkey? He said,
the poor donkey. We have to respect the poor donkey,
who was tired. Now, but I want to know, are you getting... are you optimistic? Are you feeling good about the turn in leadership of the present Pope?
Well, you know, the churches are human institutions. And so we had two popes who were against theology of liberation. But this one is a man that, from Latin America, is an open man, is just an ordinary man. He does what we all do. He calls on telephone, he takes the bus, he drives his car. This is not something extraordinary normally, but for a pope, it's the kind we have an image of a king or something like that. The pope is just doing his work very well. He denounced last week the hypocrisy of the powerful who speak of peace but sell weapons. Of course, this is good sense.
It could have helped, and probably did help in our elections. That people said, "Why do we give guns to the Saudi Arabian royal family?"
Yes, it's horrible. And now we're just mourning our dead, and we find it awful. But if you sell weapons, they will use it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you declare war, well, you will have enemies.
Yes.
So the Pope is a man of wisdom, I think,
mm-hmm.
and is very close to people. So it's good for the gospel, because he's a humble man and he wants us to change. And it's a good encouragement for us who have been trying to live this and be faithful to the gospel of the poor to hear this message from our leader.
Mm-hmm. And all those great writers and thinkers who made up the liberation theology movement, is there going to be a second wave of them? And is there one? Do you see more writing and advocacy of the type that...
A theology of liberation, this is an expression, but mm-hmm. the current began mostly with Vatican II. And in Latin America, the Vatican the Council told us to be open to what the world is living.
Mm-hmm.
So in Latin America, it was misery. Mm-hmm. And the people were mostly Catholic, and they were in misery. And they were oppressed by Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the theology of liberation. We decided to go and live among the poor and share their life. And we understood many things that we couldn't understand when we were not there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a theory, but it's a practice of the gospel. And this is being lived in all the world. And in Asia, in Africa, there are some people who live the same thing. In all the confessions, I was working very much with evangelical churches, Pentecostal churches in Chile. And we had the same approach.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a current that I think the spirit of Jesus is awakening within the church.
Well, it is great story, and I'm very glad you put it down in print, and now we can read Rebel Priest. And Claude Lacaille, we look forward to seeing you in Toronto on Friday the 20th. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for your invitation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Father Lacaille, and he will be here at Betsatun and on Friday the 20th, 7 p.m. And he, of course, is going to be – the moderator is Ted Schmidt, who has written Never Neutral. And Phil, what's the name of his website?
TheologyInTheVineyard.wordpress.com.
WordPress.
A great name for a
– Theology in the Vineyard.
And, of course, Ted's often a guest on this program, and he'll be moderating.
WordPress.com. Yeah,
right.
So
That's at 7 p.m. Admission is free. Of course, they'll
612
Markham Street at Betsatoon. And, of course, the book, Rebel Priest in the Time of Tyrants, will be for sale.
Yeah. And so, again, this is the Taylor Report at CIT 89.5 FM. Thank you for all that contribution and support for the station and joining and becoming members, et cetera.